Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. It is Christmas week. We have Christmas hours, which means that we will be closing early on Thursday at 7 p.m.
Yeah, only like 2 hours.
2 hours early, because we're here for you.
Yes. I believe traditionally in that last hour, the store will almost become devoid of life.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, we'll see.
But we're there for you.
If you need last minute...
We could be just inundated with
devoid of life makes it sound like we, like, kill things. like a disintegrator beam goes through.
So let me just be clear. Dave is not going to be murdering anyone the last couple
it's
hours
the
of Thursday.
It's the beam that does it. It's not actually me.
Well, no. Tila closes, so Tila will be murdering people.
That's right.
Tila will not be murdering anyone on Thursday night. I'd like to promise that. I feel like I can deliver on that promise.
Nope. In fact, we should have last-minute cool stuff.
Yeah, in fact, we got some cuff stuff today. We got the Imperial Carrier for Star Wars X-Wing, which is from Rebels.
A bunch of new
Imperial Assault stuff. And, we will have one last game order going in for Thursday, so we should be stocked on things, and you can make a special order up to Wednesday night. So.
Yep.
And then... Friday will be closed for Christmas Day.
Yep.
But we'll be opening it normally on Saturday. Then the next week, we'll do the same thing. New Year's Eve, we will close at 7 p.m. New Year's Day will be closed, but we do expect to have various board, card games. If you're looking for good games for your New Year's party, that kind of thing, we will have many games, including the new game Red Flags, which we all got the chance to play recently.
Are we going to talk about that later, or are we going to talk
about we're talking about it right now.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
Oh, but I have a quick question first. What day does New Year's Day fall on?
Friday.
Friday. So it's literally
it's pretty much always the same. Christmas Eve, Christmas Day.
Carbon copy of.
You think Christmas I might know it by this point in my life, but
This many years in, but no, it's all right.
I'll keep track of these.
You know what's weird though? Dave always knows when Arbor Day is. Always.
Groundhog Day.
Respect, Randy.
Sure. By the way, Dave. The best thing would have been if you'd had that ready and you could have said, yeah, it's this day in 2016.
That would have been
great.
It
would have been funny. But we don't plan these things.
If there's an infinite number of alternate universes, there's one where I do.
It's true. There is. There's one universe where you know where I'm
going. That's the greatest days of them all.
So basically what you're saying is in some alternate universe, the only thing that is different between you and that Dave is that he knows what Arbor Day is.
It's the very definition of the word infinite.
And do you know what I call that guy? Arbor Dave. Anyway, yes, Red Flags.
Right. So Red Flags, for those who don't know, is we did talk about it in the podcast the other week, but it's basically a party game somewhat in the style of Cards Against Humanity
and Super Fight.
Where you're going to have a hand of cards, but it spoofs the single life, I suppose, I would say, and dating.
Yes.
And,
the single life in general, not the terrible show with Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie.
Man, I forgot that was even a thing.
Yeah, sorry.
Anyway, so you're going to get a hand of cards, and you have it's like several things that are attractive qualities, maybe in a date. They're beautiful. They are have a prestigious job or something like that.
They can get you free drinks at any bar in the world.
Free drinks at any bar in the world. I had one card that was like they own one of every car in the world.
Yes. Yep.
In fact, that was how I enticed Casey McDaniel to choose mine. And your goal is, in fact, to get your mate chosen by the person.
Basically, it's as if you are trying to set your single friend up, but one person is single, single each turn. You're trying to set your single friend up with a blind date.
Yeah.
And you're listing these two qualities that make them good. And they're everything from, like, a good listener, like, you know, a reasonable thing, to crazy things like owns Mars is one of the cards.
Right. And I think and some of them are a little bit dirty, like will give you the perfect orgasm or something like that. Not super dirty, a little dirty.
A little dirty. Yeah, there is an expansion called Dark Red Flags that is super dirty. Yeah.
And you get to, you have, I think, four of those white cards, so you get to choose two, and then you can change your hand mix.
Yes.
And so you put those down, and then the fun begins.
Yes.
Then everybody has, like, three red cards in their hand, which are things that might sabotage the dates of the other people.
For example, is secretly two kids in a trench coat.
Yes. Or literally wants to kill you. Or
hates you.
Only speaks in hashtags.
And posts on your Facebook every day, so what are we? That's how I got Amanda to not choose one of her perfect matches.
You know what? I think one of them was also was like constantly talks about how hot their cousin is.
Yes,
constantly compares you to their cousin, who they say is super hot.
Yeah, and the deal is basically you try to throw a red card on the person to your left. So basically, someone puts down the date, they're getting, and you try to ruin that person so yours has better chance.
What's awesome is basically the way this plays out is you do you go around the table and everybody puts down their good cards, and you know you're already kind of getting a vibe. You're like, oh, he's gonna like this one is the clear cut so far, the person he would they would most like. Then everybody sabotages it, and that's hilarious.
Yep.
And then I think maybe the funniest part for me is there's one final thing where everybody defends their thing.
Yep.
And if your thing is like the person is a zombie, you got to find a way to defend the zombie lover.
I was pretty happy with some of my successful defenses.
I saw some awesome defenses, I have to say. Some ridiculous ones. Occasional times when people are like, I cannot defend this.
Our friend Amanda Hickman was particularly good at pitching people.
That was y'all were in a separate group, so I did not see that.
She turned a few of those around. And our friend Jimmy Jones, who was standing by, helped the other Amanda out with a Bill Pullman-esque speech for her candidate, which I thought was spectacular.
Nice.
I
heard y'all from downstairs. I heard y'all laughing, and we heard you guys uproarious good time ourselves.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah,
it's a great party game. It's pretty cheap. I want to say it's like $30.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like along with Cards Against and Super Fight, They're the holy trinity of the new party card games.
Yeah, that anybody, I mean, you don't have to be a gamer. You could bring this to, if you have an open-minded family.
Right. Yeah, and honestly, like you say, I guess even with the basic one, there is just a little bit of nerdiness.
Yeah.
Nothing too crazy.
Yeah. But we really like it and recommend it as a good, Christmas Day or New Year's Eve kind of game. Yep. If you're,
it is the one that I expect to be hand selling a lot of because I liked it so much.
Yep. All right. Moving on to January dates, we've got Reading with Rogues. We've got Star Wars Volume 1. We'll be doing it at Tsushinini on Tuesday, January 12th.
It's gonna be a blast. I think we're gonna have a good turnout, so everybody listening must come join us.
Yes, must. And Ladies Night is going to be on January 13th. That will be at Palermo's Italian.
Yep.
And then the next Sunday is the Magic the Gathering Oath of Gatewatch pre-release, which we'll have on January 17th.
Oh, crazy.
Yep. So that'll be – we always do two of those. There's one at 12. There's one at 4. You can always sign up for both.
I hope they send us another giant model to build.
Yeah. And then on that Monday, January 18th, we'll be doing the starting up our Gaming with Rogues again with our favorite game, Machikoro, and that will be over at Lamppost Coffee.
I think I'd like to take a moment to compliment Chris Jones, our volunteer for Gaming with Rogues, who's been consistently doing a great job. I know people seem to be having a really good time with it. And I think part of that is Chris himself is a really genial guy, picks up on the games pretty quick, and deserves all the praise in the world.
Well, it was his idea. He was the one who started this out for us. Yep. So Chris keeps that thing running.
A thank you to Chris Jones.
Yes. All right, moving on to one little bit of news before we get into the Star Wars news. Vixen, who had mentioned, there's an animated show you can watch. Have you watched? You guys watched any of it?
I never got around to it. That is the DC character.
The DC character Vixen.
Yeah, she's a somewhat lesser-known superhero who they were kind of, through some animated web series or web shorts,
where it was
kind of introduced into the world of Flash and Arrow.
Yeah, it's a Flash Arrow team. Amel and Gustin do the voices, I think, and they have an actress who voices Vixen, and they did a series of shorts on CW Seed. I watched the first, like, three or four, and they're solid. They're interesting enough.
Yeah.
But they are bridging that character over into the Arrow universe. She is going to – the actress who voiced her is, of course, going to play her. And
oh, really?
Gonna,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it is going to be on Arrow. They're going to bring her in, which is cool. They've needed an African-American woman character. I mean, I guess they've got, Kendra Saunders now, but they needed to add that to the DC universe, and she's a great character.
Are they running with the notion that Vixen was like a supermodel or a model of some sort?
No, she's just more of a – I think – I can't remember exactly. I don't think she's a supermodel.
That's what her like 80s era origin was in the comics.
She's got a dad she lives at home with and that kind of thing. I think she might be. I don't remember what she was doing, but I don't think she was a supermodel.
Just curious.
But she does have the necklace that gives her the powers and stuff like that.
Yep. Well, especially as the I've seen those effects done. Didn't they do her in one of those DC shorts from the what do they call that DC all the shorts that they did?
DC shorts. Wasn't that what they were called?
The little interstitials that were on Cartoon Network or whatever?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, whatever they were called. Didn't they do one with Vixen? Or maybe am I thinking of Brave and the Bold?
You're thinking of Brave and the Bold.
The way they did it was really cool on Brave and the Bold.
And she was heavily on Justice League Unlimited.
I bet it was Justice League.
I think that's what you're thinking of.
Yeah.
She was heavily in Brave and the Bold, too.
Yeah, but they've used her powers. Justice League Unlimited is where they originated it.
To see how they do her, because basically she can draw on any animal in the world and sort of gain its powers. She can fly like a bird, become super powerful and strong like a charging rhino. And usually in the comics and stuff, they kind of draw like a little shadowy reflection of that creature behind her while she's, you know, knocking the crap out of somebody.
They could do that with CGI. I wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways they could do it, but I will be interested to see whatever they choose. Yeah. They seem to be doing a good job of depicting the powers on all those shows.
Yeah, agreed. All right, all the other news we have here is Star Wars news. It is non-spoiler news that we have. We're going to leave all the spoiler stuff for the end of the show. Right. We're going to do a break. And then we're going to give a spoiler warning after the break. We will not accidentally spoil Force Awakens for you. We've been very careful about that.
Yeah.
But there have been a couple – in leading up to Force Awakens, there were a couple things that showed up on the internet. One of which was Jimmy Fallon and the Roots and the new stars of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Doing an a cappella version of the
John Williams theme music. The best known tracks. These aren't from the new movie, but the classic trilogy. Yeah.
Well, and what was great is that they had the sort of heroic people did the classic Star Wars. Right. Then the villains, the two people playing villains, did the Imperial March.
Yeah.
The droids and Chewbacca went and did the Cantina theme.
Yep.
And it's all this little thing cut together. It is a joy to behold.
They divided the screen sort of Brady Bunch style.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the well done, you know, ba 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 ba,
yeah.
Ba 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 ba, but, like, really, really well handled and charming. You know, Fallon has been really on point with all the music stuff.
Yeah.
That's his thing.
Yeah. I watched it about once a day before I went and saw Force Awakens. I was really enjoying it.
It's super cool.
Yeah. Really fun, worth a look, and we'll have the link in our show notes.
Yeah.
Also, less reverent, but quite amusing. Bad Lip Reading has done all three of the original Star Wars movies, Star Wars, Empire, and Return of the Jedi,
yep,
as separate segments. We've all seen Star Wars. I've seen the other two. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
I love the
Bad Lip Reading guys.
Yeah. It has some of their favorite, the weird nonsense reading of lines.
Yep.
There's some songs, which are always good.
I don't remember if they – did they start doing that first with the Walking Dead one?
I think they've done it before, but Walking Dead was one of the big ones, yeah.
If I had to pick my favorites overall that they've done, by the way, I feel like it might be the football, the NFL one.
That was good.
And also, what was the other one?
Game of Thrones is one of my favorite. The one that where it turned into like an 80s ad for a medieval themed theme park.
Oh, yeah.
Like a movie about a theme park. Oh, man, that one killed me.
But, but you know what? It's cool because these guys are getting, you know, they're getting clever enough that they're starting to like tie it in with something, you know, the new Game of Thrones season starts.
Right.
They've got their bad lip reading, new Star Wars movie hits. They got their bad lip reading,
Super Bowl hits. They got the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm happy for them because that does not seem like a market that you could like make money on necessarily.
Yep.
But now, like whenever they do a new one, I always see it trending on Facebook,
yeah,
and stuff.
I
like
think
that.
With the YouTube ads and stuff, they're probably doing,
yeah,
all right with it.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah, but it's worth looking at. I'll put the links to all that in our
And that is all original trilogy Star Wars, so there's no risk of spoilers.
No spoilers.
If you,
yep,
if you haven't seen,
yep,
it yet.
There's also some great guest cast in that. They have
yeah,
Jack Black and Bill Hader and Maya Rudolph, a lot of SNL people.
Yeah, it reminds me of how what started off as a slightly smaller thing, the Epic Rap Battles of History thing,
yeah,
which, you know, I think just had some probably just various lesser known comedians, like kind of nobodies at the time, YouTube comedians,
yep,
and stuff. Went on to bring in guest stars like Snoop Dogg and tons of people at this point.
Yeah.
I'm going to blank on every single person except for Snoop Dogg.
And
but they had like Key and Peele on. And
yeah,
stuff like,
yeah,
that.
In fact, they've been on like three or four times.
Yep.
But Epic Rap Battles reminds you, they just did one too, a special.
Oh, it was
they
good.
Did the Boba Fett versus Deadpool.
Yeah,
which was really fun.
I did not watch this.
You know, everybody, most everybody who watched it, really liked it. Liked both parts. I believe felt that like Fett owned it in the last in the last round.
Yeah. all right. We have one more bit of Star Wars news, but it's a little spoilery, so we're going to cover it when we get to the actual Star Wars section. So we are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about comics for the week of December 23rd. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, December 23rd, and Dave, why don't you start us off?
Okay. I've kind of an unusual pick this week.
Not from Marvel.
It's not from Marvel, but, you know, last week we were Image Heavy. We did Descender and various other stuff, so this is, you know, we're not
Marvel every week.
But
almost every week.
We are. I'm ready to turn my back on it. I'm ready to backstab them and become a super fan of only Boom. but this week, though, IDW with The Rocketeer at War.
Yeah.
First issue of a, I presume it's a miniseries.
It's a miniseries.
Now, I gotta say, over the last few years, they've done various Rocketeer miniseries and specials and reprint the original ones.
Yeah.
I love the original two ones from Dave Stewart.
Dave Stevens.
Dave Stevens, thank you. Dave Stewart is the colorist.
Yep.
But I have not closely followed the other stuff. I sort of felt like, the Rocketeer story is done. I just didn't have a strong interest in it.
Yeah, and it had, good people on it. Mark Waid good people on it.
Actually, although reading this, I'm like, maybe I need to check out some of the better ones, the better received ones that have come out.
I liked them, although I liked this better than any of the rest of the Rocketeer stuff, except for the main original.
This one is by written by Mark Guggenheim with art by Dave Bullock, which I think was the big draw that made me want to read it.
Dave Bullock is
tell me what he's done, Randy.
He's a guy who's worked in animation. He works alongside Darwin Cook on a lot of things. That's a very Darwin Cook-esque style. He did Action Comics covers it was probably 10 years ago now, but he did these amazing Action Comics covers.
So good.
That were sort of in the Max Fleischer style.
The 40 Superman Max Fleischer stuff, Yeah, if you can picture it, if you don't know Darwin Cook, you probably know Bruce Timm from Batman the Animated Series. Picture him doing hard-boiled stuff.
He worked with both those guys,
This is indeed, the original Rocketeer was probably set in like the late 30s or something, Rise to War.
Yeah.
So now you've actually got war going on, and there's sort of two parts to this story. One is sort of the backstory, which is that the army has been trying to train other people, basically Cliff Secord, the Rocketeer.
Yeah.
Who's kind of just a regular guy. He's just in the comics, he's sort of a normal dude.
Yeah. He's a good pilot.
He's a good pilot. But he's kind of like a all-American boy.
Yeah.
And he signs up for, he enlists in the war effort. He's apparently given the rocket over to the government, and he's like, maybe you can do something with this. They've been trying, and nobody can fly it like he can. In fact, they are having fatal accidents.
Right.
Stuff. So they are trying to put their hands on him to, because he is just a GI over...
Yep.
He is actually stationed, it looks like, if I'm correct here, in Africa.
Yeah.
Part of the issue is also his sort of battlefield stuff. And there's a bit more seriousness to this because it's war. But it's also a little bit of that Sergeant Rock kind of action-adventure wartime stuff.
Yeah.
Clandestine meetings on the battlefield, face-offs with kind of some arch foes. Motorcycle chase.
Ratsies.
A plane that crashes with a beautiful female pilot.
Sure.
The Rocketeer has always had a slightly lurid side to it with essentially his girlfriend is basically Betty Page.
Betty Page, yeah.
And if he should happen to save a beautiful red-haired Scottish.
Irish lass.
That's just right up Cliff's alley.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the slightly loserish guy who seems to luck into a lot of things.
Yeah. Peter Parker.
Yeah. He's definitely kind of a Peter Parker-ish guy. Anyway, the full mix of it all just really worked for me. I had a great time with it. There is also a sort of developing subplot with his girlfriend back home.
I like that too.
And I like the reveal on that. And of course, events are going to conspire to get him in the jetpack and suit and stuff like that. But in the meantime, the first issue has tons of action adventure stuff.
Yeah,
it's that Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of vibe.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Yeah, not a ton to say about it. It's not a super deep comic, but if you are a fan of the movie, and Lord knows you should be, or the comics of any stripe. Definitely give the Rocketeer a war shot.
And if you've never read it, I don't think you have to have read any Rocketeer to pick this up.
No, I really don't.
If you just like sort of action adventure with really cool art, I'd give it a look. It was a lot of fun.
It looks like there's a little text backup story in it, which I haven't read yet because we got a cram session these things.
That's right.
But I am looking forward to reading that. I'm having really liked the story. I'm going to see what the text piece says.
All right, Nick, your pick
is a Marvel book. in fact, both this and my cheater pick.
Both of mine are, too.
You know, whatever.
Goodness gracious.
However, this is the fifth issue of Amazing Spider-Man. I think I could pretty much say that we're all still on board this.
We're talking about Best Of for next week, and I believe Amazing Spider-Man is likely to land on that Best Of.
Since I have not read, I didn't read a ton of books today, I believe that I'm going to also say that this is my cheater pick, and I'm going to ride on your coattails, Nick.
Well, and this is also the end of the first story arc. So, see some tying up of basically Spider-Man facing off against the new Zodiac. Working with S.H.I.E.L.D.
I think we've all liked the way they've kind of rebuilt the Zodiac, which...
Yeah.
They were bad guys that used to be, whenever they showed up, and I don't remember them from a ton, but maybe, West Coast Avengers.
West Coast Avengers had a decent run with them, yes.
But I tend to think of them as bad guys when they show up, I'm like, oh. yeah. Zodiac.
Yeah.
But they've been pretty cool in this. It's a good new vision of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, sort of, instead of it being a solo book, I mean, Spider-Man's still Spider-Man, but I like the addition of, you know, his interactions with Mockingbird, Prowler. Nick Fury,
yep.
Pretty much Human Torch.
Human Torch, yeah.
It's all good, and both the writers, Dan Slott and Christos Gage, give those interactions it's justice.
Slott and Gage work really well together.
They do, and they've worked together.
Wait, does Christos Gage co-write the book?
He co-wrote this issue, and I think he may be coming on to co-write.
Yeah, they occasionally flip-flop on writing duties.
Yeah, they must mesh pretty well, because I don't think I particularly noticed it. I've always felt that there's a very nice, consistent
but
vibe.
But for a book of the... A lot is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot happens in every single issue. Subplots are introduced, subplots are continued.
Well, and there's stuff going on with Parker Industries, which is kind of cool that harkens back to some of the Superior Spider-Man stuff.
Yep. Pete's in kind of hot water in this one because he bailed on a mission last issue.
For good reason.
You know what's interesting is that although the status quo has changed, Aunt May was doing like relief work, he's helping S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
This is not sort of normal Parker stuff, but he is still put upon Peter Parker.
Yeah.
He still had to abandon something that needed doing to save Aunt May.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, this is very traditional.
Still classic Spidey.
Parker,
you're right.
I mean, Parker hasn't changed.
Kind of a new world. Yeah.
Yeah. He just has he's a business now. Yeah. He's going to drop everything to save May.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things I like about this is that everybody's like, oh, this isn't my Spider-Man. It really is. It is. It is basically still Spidey, great Parker responsibility. It's got Aunt May. It's got him. He still has the same, you know, friendly with Human Torch.
At its core, it's Spider-Man.
It's still Spider-Man. It's just a different. It's just
a
different take.
Different packaging, and I think it's great. There are some laugh out loud moments, especially as he takes on the bad guys in a museum.
Yeah.
There's some great one-liners.
Yeah, it's a funny book too, and it gets the character. There's a real love for Spider-Man that comes through in Slott's work, which I know some people will be shocked to hear.
You know, for me, what I like about the humor in this is that because humor is a sort of dicey thing for me in superhero books. I feel like when they lean too heavily on it, I can't take the situations at all seriously,
right.
And so the action adventure stuff loses any weight. But here it walks that line that Spider-Man traditionally has been pretty good at. But sometimes he can, you know, it's possible for him to get too jokey where I'm like, eh, he clearly isn't taking the situation seriously. Well, you know, the situations in this get sort of serious.
It's very serious. But yeah, no, I've loved every issue of it, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon.
All right, so my pick of the week is another Marvel book, and that is Spider-Woman number 2, which I was noticing, I feel like this might be 6 weeks out. I feel like it's been a little while since we saw number 1.
Yeah, it's a little.
So maybe a little late. I love this book. I continue to love this book, and I believe I talked about, I think it might have been my pick last time was number 1, but number 2, basically, Jessica Drew is 9 months pregnant. And
I have to say, I kind of love the pregnant covers.
And she's had to retire from superheroing, which she's not great at. And so Captain Marvel has been doing, her best friend Captain Marvel has been doing a lot of the work for her and sort of talked her into going to this alien hospital. And of course, she goes to the alien hospital and the Skrulls invade,
right.
Which is a nice way of basically making her responsible. Like she's the mom. She's not going to endanger her baby until she absolutely has to get into the action with these Skrull guards. And so there's a little bit of a Die Hard if Bruce Willis were a superhero who was pregnant.
I did have there was a customer in yesterday who was just going by the covers.
Yep.
And he was like, oh, come on. You know, he's like, you know, you can, that's horribly irresponsible. She's like chasing after criminals while she's pregnant. I'm like, you got to read the story.
Yeah.
The covers are depicting her pregnant, which is a nice representation that you don't usually see. But she is by no means seeking out danger.
No.
The writers are conflating events or pushing the events so that she has to do some stuff, but she's not doing, like, crazy, crazy stuff.
Right. This issue, she does some crazy, crazy stuff.
Oh, right.
But she has to.
It's not of her own volition.
But there's also a lot of running commentary between her and Captain Marvel. She's trying to get her to come in and take care of it. There's a reason she can't. Like I say, there's a lot of diehard DNA in this, along with the usual sense of humor that this book has had, and I really love this book. It's really funny. It's really clever. The artwork by Javier Rodriguez is gorgeous. Just a really fun book. My cheater pick of the week, which was almost my pick of the week, is Captain America, Sam Wilson, Captain America number 4. I continue to really like this book. It is doing homage to 80s Cap in a lot of ways. So Cap Wolf is here.
Well, you know, when I picked up the issue, I was surprised that that stuck around because I thought it was just going to be for the previous issue. And I don't think they're going to lean on it heavily, are they?
What, Capwolf?
Is he still Capwolf at the
end? Capwolf for the whole issue, at least.
Okay.
But anyway, they introduced this issue, the Serpent Society, which showed up on the last page of the previous issue.
Oh, yeah.
They have gone corporate. They are now Serpent Solutions. And they're playing a lot around with the Martin Shkreli, 1%, the bad guys being corporate guys. And this whole thing opens with their leader, Viper, basically trying to tell them that, look, you know, everybody doesn't understand that corporations really make the world run. Basically trying to justify corporate villainy, which right. is hilariously good.
Right, because he's like a legitimate costumed villain
yeah.
in like a boardroom.
Yeah.
And they are trying to, he does depict a person who's like, I don't know, is this going too far? And he's like, well, think about it, and then he kind of tries to justify it. It's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, and it fits in with what Nick Spencer's been doing with Cap, which is to bring in some sort of modern social and political issues and lens it through Captain America. And I love that. I think it's really fun. It's also sort of lightweight and snarky, which is the kind of thing Spencer does. There's a great montage of how the wolf DNA has affected Falcon and what that does to his daily routines, which cracks me up. They bring in Claire Temple from the Jessica Jones and Daredevil show. There's also a new Falcon developing in the background. And they bring in what made me really love this is they bring in one of my favorite characters from the 80s, Diamondback, who was a bad girl villain who had gone straight because she fell in love with Cap.
She was from the Serpent Society.
She was from the Serpent Society. That's why she's doing here. And this does some nice stuff where basically there's some nice meta stuff in here where she talks about how being a superhero, like, you know, the Bad Girl era is over. You know, that was a big thing in the 90s that for her to be like, the Bad Girl superhero just doesn't work anymore. She's like, there's a Lady Thor. There's a, there's all these people. There's Miss Marvel. There's Captain Marvel has her own space station. She's, you know. They get taken seriously. They wear costumes. They can actually breathe in. She's like,
that's funny. It's definitely a very sort of meta.
Yeah, commentary. It's like there's no place for people like me, and that's why I've gone back doing this job. There's a reveal which I wasn't crazy about, but I understand why they went that way. And this continues to be just a really good take on Captain America. I'm really enjoying it and looking forward to see where this goes in the new year. Nick, your cheater pick?
Yes, my cheater pick is Deadpool number 4.
Which I see is doing a riff on two different comics in the front. It's got the many-colored Deadpools, which correct. Of course is a riff on Batman, and yep. it's called The World's Greatest Comic Magazine, which is a riff on Fantastic Four.
I believe yes. it's been running that for a little while.
Has
now,
it?
That tag, right?
Okay.
I may have. I think so. Or at least it's original, the past four issues. But this is number 4, and as with a lot of the Marvel books lately, we're seeing sort of three to four issue story arcs instead
yeah.
of the longer ones.
I like that.
And in this one, we actually find out who is the villain of the piece and who has been sort of terrorizing Deadpool in his sort of everyday life, screwing up not only his personal friends' lives, but his business as well. Which was a fun reveal, a lot of fun humor, wackiness, as you would expect. But there's also some seriousness involved with it, too. Especially Deadpool and his friends and sort of the relationship that he has, why he keeps them at a sort of arm's length.
Who are Deadpool's friends at this point?
You know, stuff from his past, like Bob, Hydra agent.
Uh-huh. Is Weasel still around, or is he dead?
I think he's still around. I haven't seen that, but a lot of the people that I'm talking about are stuff from, like, the Brian Posehn and Jerry Dugan run.
I'm just curious. I mean, like, are they just normal dudes? Are they
there was
mercenaries?
A S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. There was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. There's sort of a magician that sort of ran with him for a while.
I would not have guessed magician.
Why wouldn't you have guessed magician, Dave? I mean, it's Deadpool. And plus, he was a S.H.I.E.L.D. magician.
Magicians are not big in the pop culture.
I'm sorry, you say S.H.I.E.L.D. magician?
Yeah, he was part of their magic group.
So we are talking about real magic users and not like
a guy who pulls a bunny out of
a
hat.
Not a stage magician.
Not a stage magician.
An actual spell casting.
Deadpool would never consort with a stage magician.
Yeah. I also got to say, you know, I was going to say, well, maybe it's a better term, but if you say wizard, I immediately picture a guy with a gray beard and a big blue hat.
Okay, he's got a beard.
Okay, so he's more of a wizard.
Okay, he's more of a wizard, not a magician.
Anyway, sorry.
No, and there's even a stolen Fantastic Car used in this.
Okay.
But no, I really enjoyed it. I continue to like it. And there's actually a tie into the last week's issue, the Tres Punto Uno.
The all-Spanish issue?
The all-Spanish issue. There's a tie into that. So.
Okay.
It's in continuity.
That Spanish issue is going to become the collector's item in next year.
You may be. All right. So also on our comics list this week, the second issue of Daredevil by Charles Soule and Ron Garney, which we all dug the first issue quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the second issue. Thought it was good stuff. The next part of Vader Down in Darth Vader number 14. The next part of Saga in Saga number 32. And Astonishing X-Men number 3, written by Nick Spencer, who brings in Sam Wilson, Captain America, to team up with him because he's writing it and you want to give your book a boost.
Yep.
You bring in Cap. Also, Chew number 53, as that continues to get weirder and weirder. There's a new ability introduced here, which I'm like, wow, I would never have thought of that. Really enjoyed it. Also, Batman 66 Meets the Man from U.N.C.L.E. starts out this week. It's a six-issue miniseries. Valiant has a new book called The Death-Defying Dr. Mirage, which is a follow-up miniseries that is actually a woman who's a paranormal expert. Her husband died. He has now come back as a ghost, and they're trying to find a way to bring him back for real. It's a really fun book. It's an interesting mix of sort of romance and magic, and if you like, say, Constantine and that kind of thing, I would definitely give this one a look. Finally collected, The Demon Hell's Hitman. This is Garth Ennis's demon stuff that led into Hitman. It's him and John McRae. There's a lot of Hitman stuff established here. There's also the demon, the haunted tank, a guy who is reincarnated as a pillow, all kinds of Ennis weirdness.
It's like action and Ennis's anarchic sense of the world.
Yeah.
You said pillow, right?
Yeah, pillow.
Okay.
A throw pillow with a face.
What did you hear, Nate?
I'm just really, I'm trying to wrap my head around a sentient pillow.
Also weird, also collected, is this week's Captara, which is, Chip Zdarsky and Keegan MacLeod's sci-fi fantasy weird thing where a NASA crew crashed on an alien planet that looks a lot like Masters of the Universe, filtered through Chip Zdarsky's
insanity.
Yes.
What's the price on this?
It's $10. It is another $10. It's $9.98.
Yes.
It is 1 cent cheaper than all the other $9.99 trades.
Yes.
There's a great quote here, which I think says everything. Matt Fraction, who is the writer of
Sex Criminals,
he has a quote here. But above him is a quote from John Waters, the filmmaker, who, if you're a John Waters fan, you'll probably like this book. And he says, "I wish I could look and act like a villain," written and drawn by Chip Zdarsky and Keegan MacLeod. Matt Fraction's quote is, "Holy, John Waters, I love your work." So, and then there is, Dave talked about this on the previews review a little while back, but X-Men Epic Collection Volume...
It's on the very back, Randy.
Volume on the very back 12.
Yep.
The Gift, which is basically some of the Claremont Romita Jr. stuff. This is leading up to the Trial of Magneto stuff, I think.
That'd be like 180 to 200 or yeah, something like that.
There's some great stuff in here. It has the X-Men facing off Dr. Doom, sort of. There has the two-part... Kulan Goth turns Manhattan into a fantasy like a, island,
like,
basically.
Like a dark, like Conan.
Like Conan, because he's from Conan.
That was like one of the best dark stories I've ever read in X-Men.
There's a two-part X-Men Alpha Flight crossover that has some magic and stuff. Power Pack shows up. They face off with Nimrod, the evil sentinel from the future. Yeah.
Nimrod is scary.
The Nightcrawler miniseries is in here. Huh. Storm's life death after she's lost her powers and goes back to Africa to sort of get a spiritual renewal. And the I think is the Juggernaut Colossus stuff in here? It might be. But no, I think it's just shy of that. But there's some great stuff in here.
Yep, it's one of the strong areas for X-Men. And you know, the Epic Collection, we've mentioned it before in this thing. It's a reprint series that Marvel does where the volumes will be somewhat random if you were to just view them from a distance.
Yeah.
But essentially they're reprinting, they figured out what the whole run would be if it was just turned into different volumes. And then they're reprinting the key ones. So, you know, yep. It could be like X-Men volumes 12 through 20 are like, that's the super golden era that everybody loves best. And then they also probably printed volume 1 because it's classic Lee Kirby. And then they'll be filling in the other ones for the more diehard collectors. But the point is, you can get, like, the best stuff right now.
This is specifically 1985 to 1986, Uncanny X-Men 189 to 198. This is about when I came into X-Men. This is, like, for me, as nostalgic as it gets. But it's also just great. John Romita was always good, and he's really good in here. If you like X-Men and you've never read these books, you need to pick this up.
Yep.
Nick, what else is on your stack?
Second issue of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur continues to be a blast. Just more Devil Dinosaur romping through New York, because, you know, that's something.
And also the Killer Folk, which I thought there was some fun stuff with
there
them
really
blending
was.
Into New York.
Second issue of Venom Space Knight, which sort of answers Flash's question of what it means to be sort of a defender of the cosmos, and plus some really gorgeous artwork by Errol Olivetti. Fourth issue, of Extraordinary X-Men, Jeff Lemire's X-Men book.
That looks like Mr. Sinister on the cover.
It is indeed Mr. Sinister on the cover.
I bet he's in the interior.
As he's revealed Maybe. To be sort of the big bad of this opening story arc.
Okay.
Also, some big things occur in there. The second issue of DK3, The Master Race.
Which I kind of liked. I thought it was kind of fun. I really thought this was going to be a train wreck, and instead it's interesting enough that I'm following along.
Yep.
How long is this series?
Six issues.
Eight issues.
That's pretty big. Is that going to make it longer than any of the previous ones?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But I have to say, still enjoying the artwork quite a bit.
Andy Kubert's
artwork. I always get him Andy and Adam Kubert confused, but... I forgot to read the mini comic with Frank Miller.
Looks like Wonder Woman's in there.
It's basically Wonder Woman and Supergirl.
Okay,
His art looked pretty nice on it.
It does. Supergirl is her daughter, right?
Yes.
Supergirl is the daughter of Wonder Woman and Superman.
Yes,
correct.
Actually, looks quite fun. This went to some dark places, though. I will say that.
Yeah, it did.
I wasn't shocked, but I was kind of surprised.
That gave us grim and gritty.
But also. Should mention, we're a little light on this week, but we will be getting our extra copies in hopefully on Thursday. The holiday shipping has messed with it a little bit, but we do have some on the shelf. But if you're desperate to get it this week, you might want to email or call us tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Also, the first issue of Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat. I haven't had a chance to read this one, but it's a new series by Kate Leth. And really have to commend the artist, Brittany Williams. This
reminds me
really
of Squirrel Girl and that kind of stuff.
I was reading a little bit of it, and I was enjoying it. I would say, yes, if you're enjoying Squirrel Girl, honestly, or Howard the Duck, any of their sort of lighter books, She-Hulk back in the day, you're going to want to check it out. And some people, like, at least know the name of Patsy Walker, of course, from the new
Jessica Jones series.
Thing. Did she go by Patsy, or was she Patricia?
Patricia.
She was Trish. She was Trish on the show.
Right. But yes, this is a this you don't need to know anything about the character's past. They get you up to speed.
The fourth issue of the New Avengers, which finally introduces fully Moradin, Space Wizard of the Fifth Cosmos.
Okay,
is very
and Deadpool's friend.
No, this is actually a very Cthulhu-esque monster that sort of survived as the Earth has sort of rebirthed itself in a lot of ways.
Okay.
He's a survivor of, like, one of the previous Earth, universes. It's interesting. And then the second issue of Sam Humphrey's Star-Lord, which I am really, really enjoying still, and the art by... this is sort of Star-Lord Year One, sort of giving him more of an origin story, sort of seeing how he interacts with... originally comes into contact with Yondu and a few other people.
This is them also sort of aligning the movie origin with the comics origin
a little bit. But, I mean, the art is gorgeous. And it's by Javier Garon, which I'm not super familiar with.
You know, this is one of the nice things about the Cinematic Shared Universe that Star Wars has a little trouble doing is that Marvel Cinematic is going to go do Star-Lord origin stuff in Guardians 2.
Yeah.
And it will probably contradict some of what they're doing now.
Probably so.
But whereas in Star Wars, people are like, oh, then the comics aren't real. In Marvel, like, they can do what they want, and then the differences are sort of part and parcel of what makes this cinematic universe and the comics universe different, and it's okay.
Yeah. Right.
So they can jump into and do the origin stuff early on, and it might even influence the movie.
It's true.
Which is kind of cool.
But that concludes my reading pile.
The only thing I have that y'all did not mention is just the latest issue of Astro City. As y'all know, I always liken the Astro City. This one is the second part, I don't know if it's the concluding part or not, but of that story about the alien invader type race, as viewed from the point of view of like a student on their world.
Right.
And his thing, of course, is that he grew up under all their propaganda and anti-Earth sentiment and anti-superhero sentiment and stuff like that. And he thinks the guys who go off and try and invade Earth, those are like his heroes.
Right.
At the end of the previous issue, I haven't read this one yet, but at the end of the previous issue, essentially their equivalent of the Fantastic Four, the First Family.
Yeah.
One of them had been captured by them, and I think even he helped in the capture, but it's... if I had to guess, the sort of traditional way that this goes is he is going to see the sort of cruel treatment by the leaders of his world, from the First Family, and probably turn against them. But I have a feeling Kurt Busiek is going to take it some step beyond that, or kind of zig instead of zagging, and I'm very curious to see where this ends up.
All right, we are probably next week going to do, in addition to our regular comics commentary and stuff, our best of the year. We're working on that. If anybody has any suggestions or things they want to hear, this is a good time to post on the Facebook page or drop us an email.
You know what? When we do it, Randy, we should make a call for people to post like their top five.
Yeah, sure.
Top five favorite series or something.
We're going to talk about best of comics. We'll probably talk about our favorite board games, card games, that kind of thing. We'll see what else we talk about. We probably will leave movies and TV out, but we'll see. And then,
I was going to mention a few things. I know I posted those on our Facebook, so if you looked there, great. But I will say, there are some good gifts coming in tomorrow if you're looking for that final gift.
Yep.
Oh, right.
There's Deadpool watches. There's a Green Lantern power battery.
Bus bank.
Which is awesome.
Yep.
There's some new action figures from the JLA Gods and Monsters.
Right.
Done by off of the Bruce Timm style. The Batman animated series style kind of, and there's also the DC Icons Flash
that comes, which comes with the Cosmic Treadmill.
Comes with the Cosmic Treadmill, and that Flash figure is great. It comes with interchangeable hands. You can make it look like he's
really
running. It is sort of like the best Flash figure around.
Yeah, if you have a fan of the Flash TV show in your house and they're looking for something as an action figure, this would definitely be the way to go.
Yep.
All right. Well, for those of you celebrating, have a Merry Christmas, and. We are going to do a break, and then we're going to come back and discuss our Star Wars Force Awakens thoughts with spoilers. So
right. If
you have not seen Force Awakens, Merry Christmas. We will be back at you again next week.
Yeah.
If you have,
come join us.
Come join us, and we're going to talk Star Wars Force Awakens. All right. Once again... Spoiler warning.
Yep.
I have been so paranoid about spoiling this for anyone, as paranoid as I was about being spoiled. So if you have not seen Force Awakens and you do not want to be spoiled, stop this podcast right now. Go watch Force Awakens, then come back and listen to us yammer on about it.
You know, Randy, I'll go you one further. I feel like even if you think you're okay with spoilers and you're like, I'll listen to the review even though I haven't seen the movie,
no.
Stop yourself,
sir. Don't do that. Go see it. I enjoyed it so much not knowing what was going on in it.
Yep. They legitimately kept all the big story beats unspoiled by
yeah.
the trailers and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't see, like, the TV spots, but I can't imagine they gave away
No, I
much.
Think they did a pretty good job keeping it all quiet. General thoughts. I really loved it. I was pleased. I teared up.
Yeah.
I had my little fanboy glee. I was just super happy with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I experienced all of these things. I'll go you one step further and say it's probably my fourth favorite Star Wars.
Fourth favorite, really?
That's where a lot of people put it. Randy, I'm guessing you might consider
fourth,
third.
I rank it third.
Fourth or third. I go back and forth.
Yeah, depending on what one's ultimate stance on Return of the Jedi.
And
sure.
I loved – I remember when I was a kid, I loved Return of the Jedi. And it was my favorite of the three movies for a while because I was a dumb kid. But
it has a rancor.
In looking back at Jedi, if you go back and watch it, the first half of Jedi is pretty great. The Jabba's Palace
yep.
stuff, even – I mean, there are some issues with it even then, but it's pretty great. But basically, as soon as they start messing with Ewoks and all that kind of thing, it does take a bit of a dip. It's still good.
I think because whether it's because you're just a cranky old person who don't like Ewoks,
yep,
or I am just holding on to my childlike love of them. Although I don't do that with a lot of movies. I Gremlins and Goonies and stuff that I saw as a kid don't mean as much to me now.
Right.
I have continued to really have fond memories of Jedi and really like it. I haven't watched it in a few years, but like every when that Ewok like jumps on that speeder bike and is like,
it's still fun.
It's ridiculous, but I still like it.
It's still fun.
It's still Star Wars.
Yub yub.
Well,
indeed.
I want to be clear. I don't dislike Return of the Jedi. I
yeah.
like Return of the Jedi, but
you would just say it's the least of them.
I would just say that I actually liked Force Awakens a little better.
I just want to remind people the Ewoks are ferocious little.
Cannibals?
Yes.
Cannibals. They were going to eat Luke and Han and...
That's actually not cannibalism.
That's true. They're not cannibals.
They're just meat eaters.
They were going to eat, you know, eat them and kill them. And yeah. they are mean.
I want to point out, having watched Star Wars recently with my kids, that Jawas sound almost identical to Ewoks, and I believe that Jawas are Ewoks underneath those ropes.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's my new headcanon.
Fan theory, Randy, yes. If you want to try and get that out to the internet.
I believe we would call them, what, Urban Ewoks?
Urban Ewoks.
When I was watching it, I have to say, like, you know, we were talking about this the other day, Randy. You can't recreate your childhood experiences of watching a movie. But I have to, this may be as close as I've gotten.
Yeah.
I was emotionally involved.
Yep.
I might have, like, when that stormtrooper faced off with Finn and, busted out with his super, like, nightstick thing.
Yeah.
I might have said, holy shit, kind of out loud in the theater. Yeah. Really, I never do.
Yeah.
I was tearing up at times.
When they revealed Kylo Ren's parentage.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. It was as emotional experience, like, in some ways more than when I was a kid. Now, the excitement level might not have hit what I would hit when I was a kid.
Yeah,
but, like, the overall sort of reactions were very emotional, so...
Yeah, and I think all three of us will acknowledge there may be some issues with the film. I mean, there's some goofy humor in there that some people will find. It is a remix of what the original Star Wars was, to some extent.
It has a lot of beats from A New Hope.
We're not blind to that, but I think people are going too fast in a nitpicking territory on this. Right.
You know, at the same time, I don't think it's not going to hurt this movie, which it made $8 billion.
It made $528 million internationally, breaking all records. It made like $258 million domestic.
A little bit of criticism ain't going to hurt it.
No, it's not.
When we watched the Sarah Connor Chronicles about 7 or 8 years ago, whenever it was, that first episode actually put me off because it was all the beats from the movies.
Yeah.
And I felt like, I was like, oh, this show isn't going anywhere new. And then in the last 10 minutes, it went somewhere new. And I was like, all right, I'll try it. And then it became a great show.
Yeah.
Now, I feel that this was better about it somehow because there was enough kind of new stuff mixed in there.
Yes.
Certainly there were, you know, the characters and their relationships were different from the original trilogy. It just, you know, to be like, oh, there's a desert planet, right?
Yeah.
And there's the...
There's a desert planet, there's an ice planet, there's a star killer base, there's a secret Jedi, there's an old mentor who used to be a hero in the galaxy. I mean, there's a lot of beats that are similar, but they're very different the way they approach it.
But they're Star Wars beats.
Yeah.
They're things that we want.
Do you feel it served the same, it was meant to serve the same purpose that it did in Sarah Connor, which is to acclimate an audience that maybe hadn't thought about, in that case, Terminator 1 and 2 in particular, in, you know, 10 or 15 years, or mostly. This has been longer than that.
I was going to say, they needed to acclimate audiences to what a Star Wars film was after 30 years.
Yep. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, they needed... This also had to be function as kind of the apology for the prequels. People were skeptical.
Right. And so, although I can see, you know, I think it's somewhat reasonable criticism if you're it's too many, they cover too many of the same beats. At the same time, everybody I know who said that talked about how they were, like, freaking crying. And
they're seeing it, like, two or three times, so, yeah.
Clearly, it seems to have worked out.
Yeah. So,
But it had me from scene one with the stormtroopers and the
Ship. Totally. It was a great opening.
Okay, it was great.
I love Poe Dameron. He's my favorite. Okay, favorite characters. My favorite character is Poe Dameron, who is played by Oscar Isaacs, who is an Oscar winner and is going to play Apocalypse. And is just a great actor.
I actually liked Rey. She was great.
You know, what's weird, I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, who's my favorite character? And I had the same sort of sense I did when I was a kid, and I thought about the original cast. I actually liked them all about equally, which is a lame thing to say.
Yep, it's a lame thing.
But I was like, as a kid, I was not like, you know, Han Solo was awesome as a scoundrel, but I liked Luke as, like, the true blue hero, and I didn't, like, differentiate between them. I wasn't a rivalry to me. I liked them all. As far as, like, sort of immediate likability, man, it's tough. I really like Finn. I like Poe.
Yeah.
He's a character who took a little bit of flack, I've seen. I actually really like Kylo Ren.
Oh, I think Kylo Ren was a great choice.
I thought it was interesting to go with a villain that sort of... It's rare to see a sort of in the kickoff of a trilogy or, you know, of like a Star Wars thing, a villain who's struggling like that.
Yeah.
And some people are like, oh, that makes him a wuss or whatever.
I think some people have been burned.
Right.
When they saw the struggling villain last in the Star Wars universe, really the only villain who sort of struggles with being who he is Vader and Anakin.
Yeah.
And nobody, everybody wanted Vader to be a bad guy. They didn't want it revealed that he was a wussy desert emo teen.
Right.
So this to them is like, oh, it's, It's almost like a throwback to the prequels, but I feel like that's not a bad beat to hit the guy who's struggling with being the villain.
It's also backed up by the fact that Adam Driver can act.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And he did a great job
of
giving that performance, showing sort of the yin and yang, the problems with him trying to deal with that. Yeah. And
Early on when he's talking to, I guess, Vader's helmet. Oh, sorry, Nick, you finish your thought.
No, I just loved his temper tantrums. And I know a lot of people are making fun of him.
A lot of people. It is supposed to be a temper tantrum, though. It's supposed to be that he's not mature. It's the force. It's the anger and the frustration of the dark side with a young man who's not ready to handle it.
And it made him feel very human, because who doesn't have a temper tantrum yelling about something?
I break things in the store with my lightsaber all the time.
When I lost a few matches in a row on Battlefront last night, if I had a lightsaber, my apartment would be in flames.
I mean, all of us do that. So, I mean, I thought it made him more human for it.
You know what he struck me as? I thought about this like right after the movie finished. Is that he was sort of like an anime anti-hero.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, those of us who are, like, over 40 are probably going to be like, ugh, anime. Or there will be that contingent, rather.
Yes, totally.
To a whole new generation that grew up with anime, those characters have a draw. And there is an emo quality to them sometimes. Yeah. Everybody who's ever played Final Fantasy knows that the heroes and the villain, Sephiroth, for sure, is who I was thinking of. Have this kind of emo quality sometimes, and they are not afraid to admit that they are struggling and they're in pain and they're in angst and stuff like that. But I think properly done, it's something that's a sort of a potent idea. So in a weird way, I would say Kylo Ren was the character I found most interesting. Poe might have been the most intrinsically kind of just cool guy.
He was their Han Solo guy. Yeah.
I actually liked Finn as well. I mean, they gave him a very interesting dynamic of being a stormtrooper, being sort of bred to be this killer, and then when faced with it, he decides that he can't do it.
The thing I thought was interesting about Finn is that when they get him out of the stormtrooper armor, he's a lot more worldly and sort of experienced than you expect. He's not the naive guy. He's not the dark and tortured guy. He is very much a sort of a cocky guy, and it's a little bit jarring, but I love the character.
But he's also kind of bumbling.
But I'm like, where'd that personality come from if he was this guy who was indoctrinated as a stormtrooper?
Right, you're like, was he like that the whole time during his training?
Yeah.
It's possible.
I did wonder if, you know, His backstory may be nothing more than he's a stormtrooper who have had a moral compass.
Yeah.
But I did wonder if, you know, it seems like they don't use clones anymore. That was clear.
Yeah.
But it seems like they scoop up people and indoctrinate them.
Yeah.
They probably have to watch memory tapes and things
that. The First Order does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I just wondered if somebody, if they might throw in as a reveal sometime later on, somebody subversive in the First Order, somebody will find out later on. Did this deliberately? Maybe he wasn't even the only one who was meant to do that. But they wanted to try and bring down the First Order by having some of them go rogue and see what they could do with information from within. Maybe most of the other ones who they tried it with ended up getting killed or executed for being traitors.
Certainly,
he's the one guy who becomes something.
The point I wanted to make is that there's not much in this movie that's there by accident. Like every scene has a reason.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where Phasma is talking with General Crux, whatever the general is.
Yeah, Crux.
And they're saying, you know, he's never had anything like this before. This is his first offense. He was supposed to report for reindoctrination. There's definitely an implication that this is unusual that someone would break conditioning like that. And I think they've got to be building towards something, a reveal of why him, why Finn. Yeah.
Well, you know what would be interesting would be to have some other, you know, player in this, you know, somebody who shows up in the next movie or whatever, who's a right-hand man. It's pure fan speculation, but you know, we think they're like a really horrible person, but they're going to at some point let the heroes out of the prison center or whatever, and they're going to be like, I was the one. I was the one who, like, let Finn go. I've been trying to help the rebellion, or what do they call it?
The resistance.
The resistance. It's a lot of similar concepts working here. You know, he's been working on it for decades.
I could see that. There was also, you know, you and I speculated, I think it was your idea, that basically the characters in Force Awakens, the rebel pilots, that they were going to be Finn's parents.
Oh right! I still think
that's possible.
But yeah, you know, I thought that would have been clearly answered, and they did not clearly answer.
Well, here's what someone said: I hope is not true, and I'm sure it isn't. But we don't want to find out that he's Lando's kid, because you can't have the only black man in the Star Wars universe give birth to the only black character. I don't think they'll go that way.
They won't. It would be a little bit weird.
That said, I do want to see Lando in the second movie, hopefully.
Yeah, I realize he's the one guy, he's sort of like one of the big heroes we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, which they did bring in, I love that Nian Num is there, and he's, in watching the movie the second time, he is the head of Red Squadron.
Yes. Oh, that's
awesome. They have three main squadrons. Blue Squadron is Greg Grunberg, who is J.J. Abrams' buddy, who's in everything he does.
Right.
And then, of course, Black Squadron, which is awesome, and I want a Black Squadron TIE fighter.
Yeah.
Which is Poe's.
Which is Poe, and Poe's head of Black Squadron. But Nian Num has risen to be the head of Red Squadron.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
I also love that Ackbar was still around.
Ackbar's still the Admiral. He's still around.
You know, I think maybe my favorite sort of, or well, one of my favorite action scenes of many great ones in there was that first TIE fighter escape.
Yeah.
It's kind of the first time we'd seen really the inside of a TIE fighter with that kind of detail.
Right.
You know, the two-man thing.
Yeah.
And it was a really cool sequence.
Well, Poe's reaction of just getting into the driver's seat is like, I always want to drive one of these.
Yes. there's some great stuff when Finn and Poe first meet up, and he's like, and Finn's like, I'm rescuing you. And he's like, why are you doing this? He's like, because it's the right thing to do. And immediately Poe's like, you need a pilot. I need a pilot.
Yeah.
It's just, there's some great, there's some, they bond immediately. Yeah, and
they,
that is
they
so
will
important.
Be the romance of the new series.
Yeah. Cause when, I mean, they really spent very little screen time together, but when they have their reunion later in the movie, it's very affecting.
Star Wars tends to be about painting broad emotional strokes. It's not usually about subtlety. You know, they do, you know, Lando's big betrayal and things like that, or Han Solo telling Luke, may the Force be with you at the end of A New Hope.
Yeah.
You know, it's like those meaningful moments tell you a lot without you having to have long conversations.
Yeah. By the way, Han's whole speech about how he didn't used to believe in everything and now he does.
Yeah.
Takes on a lot more the second time you watch it when you realize that he's the reason it has so much resonance for him is because his kid went through it all.
Yeah.
And also, I didn't pick up on first viewing that Kylo Ren and his Knights of Ren or whatever clearly, like, murdered a bunch of Jedi at Luke's temple.
Right.
So it wasn't like Luke lost his only student. Like, his student went bad, kind of like his father did, and killed everyone. That's why he went hermit.
I fully picked up on that. Kind of caught it from the internet, but I didn't remember specifically.
It's much clearer on second viewing when you sort of know what's coming and you're not watching it.
That sort of through when she pictures,
when she has the flashbacks.
When she does,
you see that he has a group around him, and they call him the Knights of Ren. And I'm like, oh, so he started his own like little Sith empire, and they murdered Luke's students, and that's why Luke retreated because he blamed himself for it.
He's not Sith.
He's not Sith. No, he's not Sith. Yeah,
he's Dark Side, but he's
There's some crazy fan theories going on, by the way.
But before
you get to that,
before you jump into it, although I think I might have lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
On this, I did want to quick mention BB-8 is ridiculously
BB-8's great,
adorable.
Yeah,
especially amazing his little heartwarming scene with R2.
Yeah,
that was great. Yeah. BB-8 could easily have been the Jar Jar. They could have gone too far with him, and instead he's immediately winning.
Well,
there's the whole thing where he's bonking around in the flight, and he uses the little cables and it's just a great little moment. Yeah,
yeah. But also just the way the way his kind of head can tilt up and down gives him a little bit of extra emotive quality that R2 didn't
have.
He's
not unlike something say like Wall-E or along those lines.
Yeah, there's definitely some Wall-E there.
Just with the sort of voice it's given.
Yeah.
I think he's a great design.
I wanted to mention one other thing real quick about Finn. That I liked about him is that he very much wears his heart on his sleeve, on his face.
Yeah.
Like, he tends to be, he's very Star Wars-y in that sense, very big emotions. He's very excited. He's very anguished. He's, you know, very sad, you know, that kind of stuff. And Star Wars has always had a certain, like, kind of silent movie quality as far as, like, big actions and things like that. The dialogue is not always exactly super key to it.
Right.
And I thought that it was interesting that he seemed to work almost as a silent character and that you could read so much off of him. He was so emotive.
Yeah.
I think it almost is like a reaction to the sterility of the prequels.
Yeah, I think so,
all
too.
All those highfalutin characters.
Well, they got actors, great actors across the board for every single character.
Yeah.
A lot of them just kind of had charisma just right out of the gates.
Well, like you say about the prequels, I want to address that point because the prequels did feel sort of sterile and even more space opera. It was all about the Jedi Council and trade agreements and the fall of an empire and that kind of stuff. This feels like the lived-in Star Wars universe. It's a desert planet. There's a scrapper. Everything is being repurposed.
They're trying to get... She's just trying to get rations to survive.
Yeah. Vin is just trying to get away.
Yeah.
We're not in that mystical Jedi stuff. That is the underlying current, but it is not the main thing. And I think that's what the prequels did wrong in a lot of ways.
Right. Well, honestly, the Jedis have always been at their most potent when they're at their most mysterious.
Yeah.
And they may have just revealed too much in the prequels.
Yeah, it's like Wolverine.
Yeah.
You don't do his origin.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like the old Stan Lee axiom I've heard, the never give the fans what they think they want.
Yeah.
The fans think they wanted to see lots more Jedi stuff. You do want to see Jedi stuff, but maybe we didn't want to see their boring-ass councils and training kids who are, like, 3 years old.
Yeah, it's kind of all you're doing is seeing all the negatives of them and seeing how stiff they look and how okay they are with some bad things.
Yep.
But I also – the Sith thing to go back, the crazy fan theory, of course. I love the Supreme Leader, that he showed up as a giant hologram. And at first you don't know he's a hologram. You think, oh, they're doing giants now.
Yeah, it was crazy.
it took me a second.
But I've seen a crazy fan theory that people are like, oh, they mentioned Darth Plagueis, who can create life. And
I don't actually think that's crazy.
I think he's a reincarnation of Palpatine. It's not the craziest thing, but I think anyone pinning their hopes that they're going to reference the prequels at all in this trilogy, I would not get your hopes up for that. I think they are basically going to more or less ignore the prequel stuff.
I think that's generally true, but the Plagueis thing had occurred to me, and I hadn't considered with Palpatine. What I assumed is that it was Plagueis himself. They said he had, like, mastery over life and death or something like that. That, you know, he was reincarnated. That's why he's all mummy-looking and, you know, shriveled and stuff.
Yeah.
I had at least one person I know who's not a prequel fan said that would ruin it for him. It would not ruin it for me by any means. But I think you're right, Randy. They probably won't reference the prequels. Whatever you need to know about them, they're going to tell you.
I think they're mostly going to leave the prequels out of it. I think that they've decided that was Lucas's little boondoggle, and they're going to keep away from it. They're not going to outright contradict it, but I think you're unlikely to see it referenced. I also had a friend who had to go along with the crazy spoilers thing, who is convinced that that Rey is Ezra's kid from Rebels. And I'm like, that's adorable that you think they hold that much reverence to Rebels. There is no way on earth that she is going to be Ezra's kid.
No. Those cartoons
are... I am curious
are,
about her parentage, though.
They sure. are canonical.
Yeah, sure.
But that does not mean that they're going to... They have weight again for the movie.
They are Easter eggs at best. They are not going to carry the weight of she's forever tied to that series.
I was trying to recall, if you were to, like, search the movie, are there any prequel references? Somebody make a Qui-Gon or anything. Do they even drop any names?
Well, they blow up Coruscant.
Right. But... That's
about as far as it goes. And that is, I think, as Teela mentioned coming out, that was them sort of giving the bird, flipping the bird to the prequels. Yeah, like, we blew up the boring political planet. It's gone.
There's an Easter egg in there that has a tie to the prequels.
Is there? What is it?
It's a voice.
Oh, you're right. There is a voice. And we'll talk about that. There's an article at Vanity Fair that I'm going to mention and we'll link to. Before we get to that, the big spoilers.
Right.
My nephew went to see it with his dad. My nephew's about 9 years old.
Uh-huh.
And they were telling me the story that he was like, oh, I feel bad about this, but I'm like, it's almost unforgivable to me. They're walking out and he asks his son, what did you think about it? Because they're walking out past people who are going in to see it.
Right.
And his son says, I liked it, but I wish they hadn't killed Han Solo.
Oh, Jesus.
And he's like, we gotta go. And I'm like, oh, man, you can't do that. I would have been so pissed.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, I understand that kids don't know spoilers, but you're the adult. You know better than to ask that question.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that is bad.
That is the flashback on The Simpsons where Homer Simpson does it's Luke's father as he's walking out.
Yes,
I can't believe it was his father.
Yeah. It was really like, that is the worst possible thing you could have said to spoil the movie in one sentence.
Because the movie, I had been kind of keeping my expectations moderate and not following a lot of things, I did not even know the sort of general rumor that a big character was going to die.
I somehow had picked that up in the ether despite trying to avoid it. I had heard people speculating that someone was going to die.
About a day or two before I saw it, no less than two of my friends kind of overtly sort of talked about it as a possibility. One person said sort of like they got to see it like early and they're like, you know, it was really good, but fans are going to be pissed about something. And I was like, that means they killed off a major character. And I'm like, who would they be pissed about? Not so much about Leia. That'd be getting a Shepherd Book reaction.
Right, right.
And I'm like, who's the Wash? And I'm like, it's Han. Yeah. And, like, I hadn't like quite considered it that seriously, but I was like, Han, Chewie, could Luke.
This is why, by the way, when people say, when we say no spoilers.
Yeah.
We mean don't talk about it anymore because people don't know what a spoiler is. Saying something clever or making little jokes
right.
is worse than anything else, because we're not dumb people. We figure right. things out pretty quickly.
Right. If you were to say something like, it's like, I won't spoil anything, but bring a handkerchief.
It's like when someone spoiled, and this is a spoiler for Supergirl, but it's a few weeks old, the Martian Manhunter thing
right.
for me. I still enjoyed the scene, but I would have enjoyed it so much more had I not known it was coming.
Yeah. That one, they're promoting actively on their own site. They're yeah. like, what did you think of Martian Manhunter?
I had a feeling. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even get any of those spoilers, but I had a feeling a death was going to happen.
I mean, it makes sense. They give it a little gravity.
It makes sense, but...
It's just that I like hadn't like my mind hadn't gone to those yeah. places. So when I was watching it, I would have been less prepared for it.
You watch that scene in a different way.
Yeah. yeah.
That said, my 12-year-old daughter had not seen any spoilers, and she was waiting for it to happen, because the way they play it, yeah. it's like, she's like, don't get that close to him. Something bad's right. going to happen.
Well, also they hit. I mean,
but I thought that was a really
parentage and stuff. There was going to be a confrontation.
But there's every chance that could have been a redemption moment.
Yeah,
right. No, that was so clever about the scene. And J.J. Abrams is pretty good at being emotionally manipulative.
Yeah,
which is
yeah.
Star Wars. That's a good.
I think that's a pretty good ability to have
yeah.
in a movie making business.
In sort of more serious movies, it can come across as like sort of. False or just overly manipulative. In sort of action adventures and really heartfelt movies, it works. But yeah, that scene, they like, even if you expect it to happen,
yeah.
when he like hands him, does he hand him his gun or his
saber? They're sort of, they both have their hands on the saber and Kylo starts pulling it back a little bit.
Right, but at the beginning though, when yeah. he said there's like only one way to end this pain I'm in, and
yeah.
he like hands it to Solo, is it the lightsaber?
It's the lightsaber.
And you're like, oh, you know, maybe you know, for a split second, even if you kind of have some notion of what's
going
to happen.
You start thinking it's going the other way.
You start thinking it's going the
yeah.
other way.
It's sure. well done. Yeah. But I love, by the way, that Chewbacca then shoots Ren.
Oh,
just
yeah.
shoots him.
Yeah.
Well, what else do you expect?
He got, they shot the crap out of Stormtroopers with
yeah.
that.
Well, and that's a callback, too. That's a callback, too, because that's the, when Ben goes down, Luke all of a sudden starts blasting Stormtroopers.
Yep.
And so all three of them just start blasting
yeah,
away at these stormtroopers.
That was the Obi-Wan moment.
Yeah.
Hey, quick question. Was the real name of Kylo Ren, was his name Ben?
Ben, yes.
And so does that mean that he was named after Obi-Wan?
He was named after Ben Kenobi.
Which is a small thing to have, but means a lot.
Yeah.
Han Solo, the sort of biggest disbeliever in the universe. Yeah.
Well, you have to remember Leia was...
Leia was involved,
friends.
Too.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I agree. It says something that Han, who had been,
It'd be like Dr. McCoy naming his first son Spock.
Yes, exactly.
It suggests a reconciliation of concepts.
Yes, I agree. There was also some fun stuff on the freighter. I just thought the movie moves. Like, it's 2 hours and 16 minutes, and there was no point at which I was like, is this getting a little long?
No.
I was thrilled. I was a little sad we didn't see more Luke, but I understand why they did it the way they did it. There's C-3PO gets a great moment.
Uh-huh.
Where he shows up and he's sort of clueless C-3PO and gets some funny bits.
Yeah, he just shows up.
Yeah.
They mention his red arm and
yeah.
they don't tell you what
anything about it, yeah.
Well, yeah, he's like, you probably didn't recognize me.
I knew I should have gotten my replacement off.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this was a whole lot of fun. I will probably see it again in the theater before this is all done.
Yeah, by the way, I like to imagine that the writers did that. Because is Abrams directing the next one?
No, Rian Johnson is.
Right. I like to imagine that he's just like, I'm just going to throw this 3PO thing and see what they come up with for their red
yeah,
arm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing I'm excited about is it's 2 years from now, by the way, and I'm ready for it now.
Yeah.
But we also have another movie in the middle.
I know, but it doesn't tell you anything more.
Yeah.
I want to know more. I want to know about Rey. I want to know what's going to happen with Luke. I want to know what's going to happen with Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
Is his arc a redemptive arc, or is it a villain arc?
It's
now?
Fun to have some real Star Wars mysteries I care about,
mm-hmm.
since the prequels didn't really generate that kind of
right.
intensity.
Who cared?
And also another generation to twist in the wind.
Yeah,
the way we had to back between Jedi.
Yeah.
Empire
and Jedi. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, now you feel the pain.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
we're going to have another movie in Rogue Squadron.
And it's really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, no, there's going to be... But,
gonna the pain, Nick, the pain.
But we're going to get Netflix series of sure.
I don't think that's going to happen. But more to the point, it has nothing to do with other Star... There's going to be plenty of Star Wars stuff to keep us over. But really, this is the trilogy. And
yeah.
they did that job of... I'm like, I want to know what happens next. I'm... desperate to know what happens.
You know what
next.
Else is cool about, as far as like, you know, even as the movie itself mirrored many of the beats of A New Hope,
mm-hmm.
The the actual viewing experience has, in the sense that, A, yes, there's people who are going to have to wait just like we waited back in the day.
Yep.
But they also had to, like, wait in lines.
Yeah.
Struggle to get tickets.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And I'm like, weirdly, that is part of the Star Wars experience for me, too.
It's echoing the experience, which is kind of cool.
Back in the day, before there were, like, so many theaters around, you know, it's like, you might have to wait in line for hours to get in.
Yeah. I do want to mention Rian Johnson is directing the next one. He's the guy who did Looper and Brick and a lot of episodes of Breaking Bad. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with it.
Apparently, the script already exists. Yeah.
What's also kind of funny is that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has sort of primed people to this notion of, oh, well, there's going to be – the next movie is going to continue from here. And it's sort of build off what Star Wars did, but it's also sort of reinforced it. So that, like, all these people – all these young people who never experienced Star Wars waiting, they're primed for that kind of thing because they're used to, like, oh, there's going to be a teaser for what happens in Civil War at the end of Ant-Man.
Right.
Like, that's how they do things now.
Yeah, but presumably the next Star Wars movie is not going to have a preview. Or that is to say, the next
Rogue One.
Rogue One is not going to have any sort of lead into this.
I'm not convinced we may not. We'll see.
They could do a framing story that where it's like told in the present that is the Force Awakens present.
Yeah,
and they're like Mon Mothma's like, let me tell you a tale, kids.
Yeah. okay, so there's an article from Vanity Fair that I will link that says it is the Force Awakens cameos. It is a spoiler laden piece of internet article that 24 delightful Star Wars The Force Awakens cameos you might have missed.
24.
Wow. So I'm gonna run down a few of them.
Like three of them.
So a lot of Game of Thrones people. the guy who Dave hasn't seen in Game of Thrones yet, but. He plays he's from Maze Runner and Game of Thrones, and he plays a First Order petty officer. He's the one who says that's an unscheduled departure. That's a guy. By the way, my browser does not like all the adware on Vanity Fair, so these may be a little slow. Okay, so
I know one of them.
Do you?
I know the one that's the stormtrooper who is. Guarding Rey. I know that was voiced by Daniel Craig.
It was Daniel Craig.
Was him in the costume?
Yes.
Yeah. And like in retrospect, I'm like, oh, okay, I can hear that.
That makes sense.
Also, cool moment in the film.
Yes.
I sort of liked her sort of instinctive appraisal of the Force.
Yeah.
How much they'll explain and whether that means something.
Yeah.
She kind of picked up on it so fast. We'll see. But whatever the case, cool scene.
Yeah, and I love that it's also a humorous scene.
Yeah,
because she gives it to him. There's tension there,
right.
But then once she gets it, and he's walking out. She's like, "And leave your weapon." And I'll leave my weapon. And he drops it. And that's how I knew it was somebody because there's a nice little comedic bit to it. And I'm like, "That was an actor. That's somebody who knows how to make a moment out of nothing."
Yeah.
So during Rey's flashback sequence,
yes,
you can hear a snippet of Mark Hamill screaming "No" from Empire, a little bit of Frank Oz's Yoda, and a little bit of Obi-Wan saying, "Rey, these are your first steps."
Oh, I heard about
and it's
this.
Ewan McGregor doing the voice.
Yeah, and he actually came in, did the voice,
yep,
and then apparently got on his motorcycle and left. Because he's kind of a badass.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you guys know this, because you've all watched Scream Queens at least a little bit, and I didn't know this.
This took me off surprisingly.
That Princess Leia has a... or Princess Leia.
Carrie Fisher?
Carrie Fisher has a daughter named Billy Lord?
Yeah, Lord.
Who is in the... You know the girl wears the earmuffs in Scream Queens?
Yeah.
That's her daughter.
Oh, that's great.
And they've wondered if maybe the ever-present earmuffs were sort of an homage to Leia. But she is in briefly as a resistance fighter.
Interesting.
Also, Dame Harriet Walker, the niece of Christopher Lee, is the doctor who's patching Chewie up and talking about how, oh, that sounds very scary.
That was cute. Hey, didn't I see that they used some old dialogue of, like, what's his name?
Here's the thing that my wife out-nerded me on, because I didn't notice this. When Rey is escaping and the two stormtroopers are up there having a conversation, it's the same conversation the Death Star troopers were having when Ben goes by. Have you seen the new T-47s?
I noticed that they were saying something. I did not realize it was the exact same dialogue.
Yeah, so. It is the exact same dialogue, which was, I'm like, wow, I didn't even catch that. One of the Red Squadron pilots is one of the Sand Snakes from Game of Thrones. That's Jessica Henwick.
The thing I was going to mention, though, is I thought, what's his name? Alec Guinness. I thought they took a snippet of his dialogue, found a, like, ray or something within from
and,
something he said.
Yes, and they used Ewan McGregor to re-record it.
Oh,
it's not
okay.
Alec Guinness.
I see. Because I remember them saying they got just the right inflection, but it was for him to follow.
So BB-8's voice is by Bill Hader. And Ben Schwartz of House of Lies and Parks and Rec.
Uh-huh.
They said they tried to give an actual human voice, but it sounded weird.
I'm glad they went with the bleeps.
I'm glad they went with the bleeps and bloops as well. The cast of The Raid was Kenja Club. You remember the second group of bounty hunters that show up? It was the cast of The Raid.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You remember the guy, Unkar Plutt, the guy who was like, this many, you know, quarter portion.
Yeah.
And that's my ship. That's Simon Pegg.
Oh, right. I read that one, yes.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him, but they did pitch his voice down a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But that's kind of awesome that Simon Pegg was in it. We mentioned the Daniel Craig thing. What else, Nick?
A bunch more Game of Thrones cast members were involved.
Mentioned Greg Grunberg and Ken Leung, who was Miles on Lost, was one of the admirals. It's just there's a ton of cool little cameos in there.
Yeah, apparently Alias and Lost composer Michael
Giacchino,
one of the stormtroopers.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's funny because. Well, I guess these are the kind of Easter eggs I suppose I should say I like because they did not affect the movie.
Warwick Davis was in there.
That's like a very novelty stunt casty kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's just that they were all things that you could do that with. And,
yeah,
you know, it's not like I'm watching it and I'm like, this seemed like a joke scene, but I don't get the joke.
Yeah,
it's not something you really need to know about. Just
right.
Kind of fun.
It's just they're Easter eggs. Yeah,
what's a Star Wars film without Warwick Davis? He shows up in the background of.
Maz's temple.
By the way, after the
she was a cool character. By the way,
I like Maz.
She's a fun character.
After the re-edit of like, say, what do you call it? A new or not New Hope, but Return of the Jedi, where they had the new musical number.
Yeah,
and what had been kind of fun, weird music in Jabba's palace kind of became lamer.
Yes,
like in weird.
It was a whole moment. It's like a whole scene that's not doesn't belong there.
Yeah. I was happy to have some more weird space music that was cool again.
Yeah.
Like the original cantina scene, and I would say the original Return of the Jedi scene before Lucas effed it up.
You know what I think is interesting in that scene? That's Maz's temple or her cantina, basically.
Yeah.
Maz puts – there's a lot of sort of answers to the prequel stuff in here,
uh-huh.
Whether it's like the knowing when to do things, when to lay back. But Maz is a CGI character voiced by an actor and motion captured probably by an actor.
Uh-huh.
I believe she might have been mo-capped by Andy Serkis, but I think he was the screen leader.
He was the screen leader.
So basically, this proof that you can do emotion that there doesn't have to be Jar Jar,
right?
Like that basically the problem was the execution. It wasn't that Jar Jar was a bad idea. It was the execution of it that
there
was
were
the ruined
plenty of different alien races in this. I was like, what's that? What's that?
Yeah,
as I was going through.
That's the thing I loved about the cantina scene is it was like the original cantina scene. Then that was. It's a bunch of cool-looking aliens,
right.
Have nothing to do with anything.
Fun eye candy.
Yeah. But I just liked that basically it wasn't filled with expanded universe aliens or another walrus guy. You know, it was like they were all new aliens and cool-looking. And it was just like when you first saw the cantina. Like, now we know who all those aliens are. They've all been expanded out, so every one of them has a story. But this was all new characters, new alien races, and it made the universe feel new and fresh.
My wife was sad there were no Ewoks.
Uh-huh.
Well, someone had to be.
I wouldn't have minded seeing an Ewok. Chris Schweitzer, the super talented cartoonist and author of Krogan books, has been doing some super cool sketches.
Yes.
Everybody should go check out his Facebook page. He's probably got a Tumblr and stuff of it, too. But he did do an Ewok X-Wing pilot.
Yes, he did.
It looked fantastic. Randy, you remember on Jakku when the guy who was really trying to, like... rustle up, basically, BB-8, and she gets it from him.
Yeah.
That was another one of those, just cameo, looked cool, not much to it. No doubt we'll get a miniseries on him at some point, and we'll find out his tragic backstory. But yeah, in the meantime, just another cool-looking thing, just like the big creature that was drinking the water that Finn had to drink.
Yeah, that's what I liked, is that they didn't go to, like, all Easter eggs. There was plenty of just new stuff. This is a corner of the universe we haven't seen. This is Star Wars is big enough to just add new stuff in. I was really pleased with this, as you can probably tell since we talked about it for like half an hour.
I'm ready for my second viewing, and I'm going to try and do it this week or possibly next week if I have to.
All right, that about wraps it up for us this week. And like I say, we'll have one more podcast for the end of the year. That'll be our best of next week. Again, wishing you all a Merry Christmas if you are celebrating Christmas this week. And until next time,
Ho Ho Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at @roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.